You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferrat.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up after 7, it's fast-paced storytelling with Snap Judgment. This week, we'll hear stories of people with unbreakable wills. That's coming up tonight after 7 here on the Ideas Network.
First, young people have long been criticized for not being civically engaged, maybe voting less, not knowing where countries the U.S. is at war with are on the map, more likely to watch satirical news programs than serious ones.
But what if political engagement hasn't declined? It's just changed. A new book called By Any Media Necessary is a collaboration between 5 experts who look at how new forms of communication are shaping political engagement. And that means looking at how young people with a political cause have used Facebook, Twitter, viral videos, memes, and pop culture to talk about issues that matter to them.
Joining us now is Sangeeta Srestova. She's one of the book's contributors and the director of the Henry Jenkins Media Activism and Participatory Politics Project at the University of Southern California. Sangeeta, thanks for joining us today.
Happy to be here.
Well, a lot of times there is this kind of talk. What's wrong with kids today? They're not involved in politics. They're not trying to change the world. You clearly, in this book, don't buy that.
No, we don't. And in fact, some of the youth we talked to specifically spoke to that. When we interviewed them, they're like, people say we don't care, but we do. So we really see this book as giving voice to those people, to those young people. We specifically looked at communities of youth where youth were assuming leadership roles, they were forming movements, they were taking action on issues that they cared about, and looked at what was happening in those spaces.
And one thing you have looked at yourself is this idea that if someone is politically engaged in part online, via Twitter, or watching online videos, things like that, it's kind of looked down on as not serious activism. It's not seriously something that is political involvement, civic engagement. Can this be a healthy part of our political diet, online social media activism?
We believe it is. You're referring to the clicktivism critique.
Right, or slacktivism, called, people call it.
Slacktivism. Yeah, there are several terms floating around that are all kind of dismissive of this. What we actually found was that young people are operating on a spectrum. So new media use is on the spectrum of everything they do. It's part of their lives, just like the telephone or accessing the radio has been for generations before. So it really makes sense that they would reach to new media when they want to mobilize around causes that they care for.
Is it often the case that that's the beginning and the end of it? They watch something online, they maybe comment online, they youth involved in politics, and that's it? Or do you see this as leading to something else or connected to other types of political engagement?
It can be connected. It can be the end of it for that particular moment. So it could be, let's say, a young person sees a video around environmental issues and just clicks and likes it, and that's it. But it might be that the next time they encounter that issue through their Twitter feed, they're just a little bit more alert to it and notice it more. So it can lead to a little bit more of a deeper engagement. It certainly leads to a higher awareness of an issue.
You know, whether we're talking about young people or anyone else in a culture, it seems like you're pointing toward a wider notion of what it means to be civically involved or politically active, something beyond writing a letter to the congressperson or voting on election day.
Yeah, we use the term participatory politics, which might not be the easiest term to decipher to refer to that. But what we really mean by that is a broader range of acts, a lot of them peer-to-peer, so not necessarily directed at an institution or a politician. So it could be sharing information about an issue you heard about, something that you just saw on Facebook. It could be having a dialogue about it with somebody you know. It could be you making a video about that issue or even connecting it to your favorite show and saying, look, this issue came up in my favorite show and I really care about it, and then circulating it through your network. So yeah, we're looking at politics that looks really different. The language of it is very different. It's often drawing on cultural practices. And also, it might not even be directed at political institutions.
In some cases, people don't even want to call it politics. They want to call it activism. Some people, some younger people you cite in the book, shy away from those labels.
Yeah, we jokingly said that politics has almost become this dirty word. It's this word that just nobody wants to be part of. I mean, I don't think that that's specific to youth. There's just this sense of disillusionment with how politics works and what it involves and what it means to be part of it. And a lot of the youth we talked to just did not want that label on them at all. Yeah, so activism was an alternative term, social justice, caring about things. There were a lot of terms that they were tossing around.
We're talking to Sangeeta Srestova. She is a contributor to the new book, By Any Media Necessary, The New Youth Activism. The kids are all right is kind of the message. They are involved in politics and civic engagement, not necessarily in a form that previous generations might think of or recognize. Now, you have written personally a lot about something that was all over the place 4 years ago, the Kony 2012 video. An organization produced this video, a series of videos actually, about a warlord basically in Africa. Can you remind us of that story?
Yeah, so the video, which became, I believe, one of the most watched or the most watched video on YouTube of its time, it spread in 48 hours and was watched over 100 million times. It was produced by an organization that was based in San Diego, Invisible Children. I actually had the opportunity to research them and spend time with them prior to the movie and saw them leading up to it as the final push to really accomplish their goals around getting Joseph Kony arrested. And I also had the opportunity to witness the aftermath of what happened, which was a very strong backlash, public backlash, then a nervous breakdown of the founder and an eventual effective dissipation of the organization.
And you look at it kind of on both sides. You think there are things this group, Invisible Children, did well and made a difference. And you and more so the backlash thought there were a lot of things that they'd oversold or been naive about or misrepresented. Can you talk about the pros and cons of this initially very successful social media effort that got 100 million views?
Yeah, Invisible Children, what drew us to them initially was that Invisible Children was incredibly effective at mobilizing young people in the U.S. So youth who, exactly as we talked about, might not effectively take action around issues, and they were very good about deepening their engagement around the issues, getting them to care. They partially did this because they were really good at telling the story of what is happening in Uganda and simplifying it so that young people would really get excited about it. For some of those young people, that then led to a deeper engagement. But for some, it just led to watching that movie and not maybe moving forward with it. And what happened with Kony 2012 was that this all blew up at that point. Suddenly, the fact that Invisible Children had this inside group that really knew all the ins and outs of the conflict wasn't enough, because hundreds of millions of people were watching, and they were judging based on that film itself. And that kind of led to the backlash, where suddenly people are like, who is this group, Invisible Children? And what have they been doing? Are they a scam? What have they been doing in Africa? Then there were voices from Africa, which were also critical of the organization, and it just spiraled.
A lot of organizations, nonprofits, political action groups, of course, are trying to use social media to advance their cause, their agenda. What kind of lessons do you think that we should be learning from Kony 2012 and that video and the backlash to it to make this more productive, maybe more transparent, more honest, and ultimately effective?
Well, the one lesson, which is kind of paradoxical, is there is such a thing as getting too many views, and that things can get too spreadable. Another thing to realize is that you really do not have control once the message is out there. It will get spun in different directions. It will reach audiences that you did not expect, and that's a good case scenario as well. So anticipating that, preparing for that, being ready for the critiques, having your website beefed up so that you can actually respond to those critiques so that people who come looking for information can find it. Not having your website crash is also a good idea.
Switching gears a little bit, you also look at the role pop culture can play in activism, and there's a big movement apparently of people trying to create social change, help nonprofits and things like that, united by their love of Harry Potter. How does a pop culture affiliation like that lead to people taking this kind of public action?
This is, in fact, I would say, our core case study, because it really started a lot of the work that we ended up doing later. So the Harry Potter Alliance effectively takes the fight against good and evil, which is so central to the Harry Potter stories, to the real world. And so they think about Voldemort as climate change, for example, or they take stories around the enslavement of the house elves and reposition that to think about fair trade. And they take that all the way to thinking about fair trade chocolate that has Harry Potter's name on it. So this organization has been around for a decade now. They really helped move a lot of young people who cared about Harry Potter, but maybe would not have taken political action along the spectrum towards activism.
What's the forum on which they work together? How do they coordinate their efforts?
They're incredible. In fact, they're a great example of a networked organization. They are a 501c3, so they are an established organization. They have a legal entity, but they are decentralized. They work through local chapters. They spend a lot of time on Skype, on Google Docs. All their work is happening basically through the networks and affordances of digital media.
We're talking to Sangeeta Srestova. She's one of the writers of the new book, By Any Media Necessary, The New Youth Activism, which looks at new forms of political engagement among younger people, everything from social media to pop culture to politics.
And we want to hear from you on this. How do you think political engagement has changed, if at all? What do you think of online campaigns like Kony 2012, which was circulated on the internet by both supporters and critics? Give us a call at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Do you think new forms of communication have changed activism for the better or for the worse? And maybe you're an organizer who uses these tools. Call us at 800-642-1234.
We'll continue the conversation after a look at the latest news with Peter Bryant.
This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our conversation now with Sangeeta Srestova. She's one of the writers of the book, By Any Media Necessary, which looks at how social media, viral videos, memes, and pop culture have opened up a new chapter of youth political life.
And we'd love to hear from you on this. What do you think about new forms of civic engagement used maybe more by younger people? Call us at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Are you an organizer yourself? Do you think you would have been able to bring attention to your cause without things like social media? Call us at 800-642-1234.
Sangeeta, one thing that you try to avoid in the book is using the youth as an overall universal description of all younger people. There's a chapter about libertarian youth and the way they practice activism online and elsewhere. And you focus on Muslim American youth and some of the unique challenges they face as a community that wants to get the word out about who they are and what they're like, and also is worried about too much scrutiny from the public and the government becoming maybe oppressive in their daily lives. Can you talk about that a little?
In fact, the American Muslim case study would be a prime case of a network that has a very loose affiliation. I did enter into the research through a specific organization, but I really spoke to a range of young people who maybe would not even consider themselves as part of a movement if we did not exist in a post 9/11 world in the United States. So it was really a situation in which I talked to young people who grew up in the decade after 9/11 and who realized that no matter what they did, they were going to have to represent Islam in America, and that their identity was de facto politicized, and that they needed to tackle that if they were going to figure out what their American Muslim identity looked like.
One thing you mentioned is that humor is one way that the people you talk to work to make these connections online. I want to play an example familiar maybe to public radio listeners, Maz Jobrani, often on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Let's give a listen.
Just once, I wish they would show us doing something good, man. Right? Just once, right? Yeah, man. Right? Show us doing something good, like, you know, like baking a cookie or something, right? Because I've been to Iran. We have cookies. Just once, I want CNN to be like, now we're going to go to Mohammed in Iran. They go to some guys like, hello, I'm Mohammed. And I'm just baking a cookie. I swear to God, no bombs, no flags, nothing. Back to you, Bob. To the whole news piece. They're never going to do that. Even if they ever did that, they followed up with another news piece. They'd be like, this just in, a cookie bomb just exploded.
And Sangeeta, you say a lot of people who are not well-known comedians are doing the same thing online, trying to find humor in this difficult situation they face.
Yeah, Maz Jobrani is now part of an earlier generation of comedians who are out there really post 9/11 building community. So building community within the American Muslim space in sharing the experience and realizing that they all have a shared experience, but also communicating the condition that American Muslims are in to audiences outside of that community. What I saw in my research was that there were a lot of young people using humor, and sometimes it was very informal. It was my chapter actually opens with a Facebook post that was put out by Aman Ali in response to realizing that there was a lot of surveillance on mobile phones and realizing that maybe his phone was also being surveilled and really speaking to that. I also had people just making fun of it and saying things like, oh, this is for the FBI. You know, I'm just doing this so that you just, by the way, this was a joke just for the FBI. So what I found was that there were formal comedian spaces and comedians doing this, but that humor was really very much part and parcel of the movement and of the identity seeking.
We're talking about youth in the United States and civic and political engagement in new, often non-traditional forms. Our guest is Sangeeta Shrestova. She is one of the contributors to the new book, By Any Media Necessary. We'll go to our callers at 800-642-1234 with Maureen in Woodstock, Illinois. Maureen, hi.
Hi. I was a lobbyist against the MX missile system back in 1980 on Capitol Hill, and I found that the representatives weighed the mailbags. One letter was worth so much because the person stopped to write the letter. And it was different from point and click that we do now.
Maureen, thanks a lot for that call. Do you think there's something there, Sangeeta, where if you are the politician or the politician's staff member, you might look at that email or that social media post and not take it seriously? You might still look at that old-fashioned signed letter and put a little more weight behind that.
I'm not in the position of the person on the Hill to really answer that question, but I would say from what we've seen as of evidence, we actually see social media being incredibly effective in getting, for example, corporations to respond to criticisms. I can speak from experience of having written many letters to customer service and maybe hearing back, maybe not, but I've also seen examples of people getting on Twitter and saying, you know what, you really treated me badly, and having a response within hours because people get behind it. So I feel like it can probably cut both ways.
Maureen, thanks a lot for the call. And I see at various points in the book a conflict kind of between older school people who are politically involved, whether it was activists or of the 60s and 70s, and then looking at the later generation of activists, maybe the current generation, and looking down at the way it's being done and not seeing as serious enough, maybe being seen as frivolous. Is there really that conflict, or is there more of a bridge between those generations than I'm making it out?
I feel as we move along in time, there's more of a bridge. But we did see a repeated reference to, well, you don't risk that much when you're online. It's very low-risk activism. I actually put my body into the front lines when I was protesting in person. And there's certainly something to that. With that said, though, we have seen people take incredible risk by posting something online where it could, in the case of undocumented youth, coming out online as undocumented could literally lead to deportation. In other cases, you know, in other parts of the world, this could actually lead to you being hunted down and killed. So it's not true that it's necessarily a low-risk activity.
And there's also, it's not like people have to do one or the other. We've seen cases of real-life, in-person protests having an online auxiliary or coordinating efforts via social media. So people are merging those in some cases, too.
I'm really glad you brought that up. It goes back to our title, By Any Media Necessary. So we really don't see it as an and or. In fact, the young people we spoke to very often referred to drawing on much more traditional mechanisms and tactics to achieve their goals. And in fact, they saw new media as just one piece of that equation and one option they had. So I really want to stress the agency side. So it's a choice. People are using media to achieve goals. If that media didn't make sense, they wouldn't use it just because it's digital, I think, because then it would really help them get to the ends they're trying to get to.
And very briefly, Sangeeta, do you think that this is only going to get more prevalent as more and more so-called digital natives enter into their civic and political lives?
I would say yes, because I mean, for example, betraying my age, I think of radio, television, phone as just very much part of, I pick up the phone to call somebody, right? So I might as well tweet at them and I might as well Facebook them in very much the same way. So it's just the difference of the medium, but maybe the practices say quite similar.
Sangeeta, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
That was Sangeeta Srestova. She's director of the Henry Jenkins Media Activism Participatory Politics Project at the University of Southern California. She's a contributor to the new book we've been talking about. It's called By Any Media Necessary, The New Youth Activism.
Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, we'll explore the roots of conservative feminism with the author of Tea Party Women, Mama Grizzlies, Grassroots Leaders, and the Changing Face of the American Right.
As summer bug season kicks into gear, we'll check in with one of the country's leading experts on bugs that bite and sting. Spoiler alert, look out for the tarantula wasp.
And we'll meet a UW professor who says despite the current turmoil, he's staying put at UW-Madison.
That and a look at some of the top news of the day coming up tomorrow here on Central Time.